And I think too, when as he began to talk about the idea of property qualifications, he really quite meant, he meant real property. He meant land, not wealth, which was not necessarily going to be in aristocratic hands. On July 28, 1830, protests broke out in Paris against these decrees. The protests were at first carried out by journalists and by typesetters of the banned newspapers. But the, as so often would be, was the case in revolutionary France, and I must say in 1990s France too, one labor dispute quickly leads to sympathy strikes elsewhere, and within a matter of hours, literally, the protests of journalists and typesetters had expanded into widespread demonstrations. All over the center of Paris, barricades were erected. Up came the cobblestones, and the small, narrow streets of Paris once again saw barricades as they had not seen since the days of the Revolution. Charles X called out troops to deal with the protesters. They killed, actually, several hundred, but quickly lost control of the situation, were unable to quell the rebellion in Paris, and the king was forced to flee. These events occurred within 3 days, between July 28th and the end of the month. They came to be known as the Three Glorious Days of Revolution, it was the Revolution of 1830. The king, the restored monarchy in France, the king had now fled, and France faced a new political crisis. The liberals, who had opposed Charles X, were delighted at the defeat of divine right monarchy. 1830 was really a, if one can call it a revolution, it was certainly seen as a revolution, talked about as a revolution, was a revolution of the propertied bourgeoisie, who set out to unseat an unpopular minister, one of Charles X's ministers who had been responsible for the actual framing of the directives of the edicts, and they toppled the entire regime instead. They had started off with very modest goals in mind and wound up toppling the regime. Fearing the establishment of a republic, moderate liberal leaders established a provisional government, made it clear that they favored a constitutional monarchy to prevent republicanism at home, but to whom could they turn? There were no new Bourbon candidates, and the Bourbons were discredited at this rate anyway. So they chose instead to turn to the Orléans branch of the family, to the Duke of Orléans, Louis-Philippe, a cousin of Charles X. He had fought in the revolutionary armies in 1792. He was widely viewed, despite his very exalted aristocratic status with royal connections, he was widely seen as being a liberal. The commander of the restored National Guard, none other than Lafayette, the relic of the American and French revolutions, was trotted out to head the provisional government, a man of great prestige in France, who extended an invitation for Louis-Philippe to come to Paris. The Duke of Orléans entered the city. He met with Lafayette at the city hall. In an act of great symbolism, he donned the tricolor. The flag of France had reverted during the Restoration back to the old white flag of the Bourbons. And now the tricolor of revolution and the Napoleonic era had been donned by the Duke of Orléans. He was offered the crown of France by the Chamber of Deputies, and with conditions. This was to be a constitutional monarchy, he was to understand. But what was important is that the crown was offered by the people, representatives of the people. Louis-Philippe accepted the crown, accepted the conditions. He dropped the preamble to the charter. It was no longer to be a gift to the French people. Instead, he called himself the King of the French people and owed his throne to the people. He would rule simply as Louis-Philippe, not as Louis, not as Philippe VII or Louis the 19th, and preferred the sobriquet the Citizen King. restoration with a few bumps along the road had, it appeared, succeeded in France. Not divine right monarchy, not the monarchy of Metternich, but rather a moderate constitutional monarchy had been successfully restored in France.